This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Tuesday morning. We're Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan continuing. We'll get into the national championship in just a moment. Thanks to Pete for the update. This is a Brendan and Thom production, as always. Got to watch a great game last night, obviously, Danny.
Yes.
Took down the Christmas tree.
Big night.
I am a believer in the live tree. Do you do the live or the fake tree?
Live tree. We'll do it live.
Got to do a live tree. I also stop watering the tree right around Christmas time, which doesn't help because it just creates more of a mess. There was a lot of sweeping last night. I led the league in a sweeping motion on my wood floors.
The wife likes the tree. You know what I mean? She likes having the tree because it looks nice. It's ornamented
still.
Smells
great.
Smells good. We keep it healthy. I always think we keep it too long. I'm a big believer in you start looking at your watch around New Year's going, it's probably time. That's not how she feels. She likes it as kind of a decoration. Our trees tend to linger longer. If that makes sense.
My tree lingers a long, long time, generally. Mm-hmm. If I have a fake tree, it's probably going to stay up for the majority of January into maybe early February.
Okay.
I mean, that is something I've done in the past, is seen February start with my tree still up. But when it's a live tree and you stop watering it, you don't really have the choice. Here's what else forced my hand a little bit. We have a service based on our HOA where they come do like Christmas tree pickup.
And there's
two dates. The second and the last of those dates is January 10th.
So they're pretty much going, hey.
So it was
it's
either
time.
I get the tree taken down now, or I am fending for myself to get it to a dumpster somewhere, and that just means a big mess in my car and a big hassle. So I basically just decided they forced my hand. Last night was the night. When do you think you'll take yours down?
It's going to be a gentle ask. I'll bring it up casually, like, when do you think it's going to be time? And I'll probably brush it aside, and I'll just wait until she says, because I don't care. I mean, I'll live in whatever.
I'm with your wife on this. I think the longer you keep the tree up, the better.
Yeah, I think it looks nice. She likes the lights.
Speaking of nice, last night's national title game was sensational. The Alabama Crimson Tide back on top of the college football mountain. 26-23 overtime winners over Georgia despite a pair of missed field goals. They had to come back from down 13-0 at the half. They were down 20-3 at one point. They scored 26 points after intermission, and they win despite a sack on a second and after a 16-yard loss, 26. They had an 18% chance to win after giving up a field goal. Second and a mile from the 41-yard line. Cue it.
Here's Tua stepping back. Loads up. Looks long. Throws. End zone.
Touchdown.
Touchdown, Alabama. Devontae Smith. Touchdown, Alabama. And the Crimson Tide has once again ascended to the top of the college football mountain. Alabama is back as the champion of college football.
Crimson Tide Radio Network. Tua Tagovailoa, the freshman quarterback from Hawaii who hadn't played this season other than in some limited mop-up duty, was called into the game off the bench at halftime by Nick Saban. This was one of the gutsiest, ballsiest coaching decisions I have seen in years. I could not believe this. Jalen Hurts was struggling, and for whatever it's worth, probably nothing. Neither of us have ever really been huge Jalen Hurts guys, right? He's fine. With Alabama, he'll hand the ball off, he'll run around, he'll make plays, they'll win a national title. He was 3 of 8 for 21 yards, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you the idea of benching him is insanity, but
just missing open guys all the time.
He was Bortlesing this thing, but they had lost twice in his 27 starts, and while I don't do quarterbacks' wins and losses to evaluate individual performance, the track record of winning a lot of games with him on the field does make it more courageous for a coach to sit him down, and the stage... This was not some random game.
It's not as if they've been doing the Florida Chris Leak Tim Tebow thing all year either. The kid hadn't played.
This is the national championship, and you're about to tap into a resource that nobody's seen other than you at practice. Nick Saban was asked after the game, why did you go to Tua Tagovailoa, the kid who we hadn't seen before?
I just thought we had to throw the ball in a game, and I thought he could do it better. And he did. He did a good job. We made some plays in the passing game. So, hey, it's just a great win, man. I'm so happy for Alabama fans. Great for our players. Unbelievable.
The true freshman who was in high school a year ago at this time threw 3 touchdown passes, including the game winner. And if you go back and watch that throw, everyone went nuts about the throw. It was a good throw. Wide open receiver. The amazing part of that play from the kid quarterback was he looked the safety off for seemingly seconds.
If you look at the view behind, you see
exactly
where his body position and his head are looking somewhere else, and then it's that quick pivot, quick throw.
He's looking
right,
safety's cheating, dime to the left.
Amazing.
What a play, what a second half for that kid, what a decision by Nick Saban, and if I could, Danny, Jalen Hurts and the way he handled that.
Very classy.
19 years old. I tweeted yesterday, I was inspired by the fact that this guy's sitting there clapping and first one to welcome Tua on the sideline every time he came off. People were like, this is how he should be acting. You be 19 and in the biggest night of your life have something taken away from you that maybe doesn't even deserve to be taken away from you.
Yeah, so
and you handle it that well.
How about a counter to that linebacker that threw a punch, then like went after his coach while throwing a temper tantrum on the sidelines? That's not how you handle adversity, for example. Here's way bigger adversity from the starting quarterback who, as you said, is 25-2 and got his butt sat down. So one of my best buddies lives in Birmingham and is a big Alabama fan. He's been telling me all year long, they've got to put this freshman in. And I kept arguing with him, no, they don't. That's absurd. Jalen Hurts is exactly what Alabama should have at quarterback. A guy that's not going to screw you because your defense of rabid wild animals that are unstoppable is going to win you games. So is your cadre, your stable of incredible running backs. He has to check the ball down a couple times. You'll score 30 points a week and win every game 30-10. That's what Alabama should be doing. He was dead right. He was blowing my phone up last night while Tua was in the game running stuff.
Calvin Ridley had a quiet game for Alabama. I would have thought if they were going to beat Georgia, specifically if they were going to do it needing to score close to 30, that their best wide receiver, one of their best skill position guys on the outside, was going to have a big game. He had a couple drops, 4 catches, 32 yards. I wasn't overly impressed, but he did have the big touchdown catch.
Yep.
Do you think that Tua Tagovailoa threw him the ball?
I do not. Under any,
when he caught that
without question, I don't think there's
touchdown?
Any way he was throwing him that ball because he was hidden from view.
I think he was throwing to the receiver in the back of the end zone.
That's
who was
what
covered,
I think.
And it just so happened that Ridley, by not quitting on the play, kind of ran right into the perfect spot to make a falling catch.
But what a game! What stories? I mean, the Riley Ridley kid, his younger brother, who was barely a factor for most of the season.
It's 6 balls.
But Wims, their best guy, goes out with that shoulder problem. So all of a sudden, Riley Ridley's a factor. And it's like the wrong Ridley's doing this. And can you imagine that storyline if Georgia hangs on to win, if Fromm didn't just fall apart after that 80-yard touchdown that he threw? What a game. What a game.
You mentioned Fromm's late performance, not sharp at all. He ended up for the game 50% passer, 16 of 32. He, too, is a true freshman quarterback, 232 yards, a touchdown, a couple picks. He got off to such a great start, and he threw that 80-yard touchdown, that looping 48-yard-in-the-air throw.
That was a dime.
It was perfect. It was weird as the game got tight late, though.
He got worse.
He played really tight. There was a 3rd-and-3 throw to the sideline that was short, and he just completely missed a wide-open scat back out of the backfield. Might have been Sony Michel, I don't remember. But he basically had a check down throw for an easy first down to keep the chains moving. And if they get that first down, they may win.
Then who knows? Yeah.
And he missed the guy by 6 feet.
So you watched Georgia more than I did. I probably saw him, I think, 6 times over the course of the year. And Nick Chubb had more rushing yards over the course of the season than did Sony Michel. So early on in this year, when I watched him play Georgia play Notre Dame and a couple other games, that timeshare made sense. These last few weeks, Michel has been unbelievable. He had 14 carries for 98 yards last night. Nick Chubb had 18 carries for 25 yards. One guy averaged 7 yards a pop, the other guy 1.4. I understand that this is kind of what you've done all year. Look what Alabama did. They couldn't figure out how to run the football. Then the freshman, Najee Harris, started going off. They kept him in the game. Georgia needed to do the same thing. They just kept. I understand that you want to reserve some of your bullets and you kind of have a timeshare over the course of the year because one guy may be better suited to deal with damage. This is the national title game. One guy is ripping off runs, even ones that aren't there. He's still getting five or six a pop. Michelle was their best weapon. Underused. I would be so upset if I was a Georgia fan this morning because my best weapon didn't get enough touches last
Completely
night.
Completely agree. Now, this is less anti-Chubb than it is more pro-Michelle because Chubb, if you go back to the Oklahoma playoff game, the double overtime winner, he ran for a 145, averaged 10 yards per carry. And a couple weeks before that, albeit against Kentucky when they hung 42, he ran for 150 on 15 yards. So it's
Absolutely.
15 carries. So it's not like he has not been magnificent as well. But it was very clear. I think on paper before the game, it was pretty obvious. Sony Michel's the better matchup against Alabama.
He was on. I mean, think about what he did against Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
Ripping off those. And again, it's not like Chubb was bad, but you go.
He had a 75-yard run in that game. He had three touchdowns. He averaged 16 a pop.
You go, this is what is working right now. This guy is on fire. He's a senior. Go down with him.
What about the third and 20 that he made out of nothing a 20-plus yard first down carry last night? His longest of the game for 26.
Explosive.
But you're right, he was a non-factor at the end of the game, not because he got shut down, but because they didn't give him any touches. There were so many defensive players we can get into as well that I want to be on
Lord.
The Washington Redskins. I need Roquan Smith brought to Ashburn as quickly as possible. 13 tackles, a sack, 2.5 tackles for loss. What a stud he is. Deron Payne, who made 6 tackles and is just uber athletic. There was a 6'7 defensive lineman who probably weighs 315, reaching up and grabbing the ball out of the air, like he was a basketball player getting a rebound last night on an interception after a ricochet off a helmet.
They just have so many players. Fitzpatrick is a star. I love that kid, Mac Wilson, made 13 tackles for Alabama. You could go down the list. Raquan Davis is a baller. I don't know if he's ready to come out just yet. Roquan Smith is incredible for Georgia. That is why I can't unsee it. I covet it so much. I want every Redskins front office personnel to just go, oh, I get it. Let me just default to that.
Let's open up the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Listener Lines first time this morning. Those of you that watched the game last night, and based on the ratings, a lot of you did. 800-636-1067 with your thoughts and takeaways. 800-636-1067. Let's get into this, though, and we'll take some calls on this. Nick Saban in college is Bill Belichick in the NFL. He is that level's version of Belichick. Who else is in that conversation among sports coaches that are just in a league of their own, where they're clearly head and shoulders better than everybody else? Brent and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. Nick Saban is a champion once again. He is to college football what Bill Belichick is in the NFL. I don't think there's any disputing that he is head and shoulders better than everybody else in that circuit. I asked Art today, who's the second best coach? He could probably have a debate, but maybe Urban Meyer would be the name for college football junkies that comes to mind.
Yep, that's mine.
Saban has 5 national championships since 2009.
6 appearances. They lost one to Clemson. That now seems like what a crazy, weird outlier that was.
Right. Belichick, 5 Super Bowls since 2001, which is probably equally as impressive in the NFL. You could throw Greg Popovich maybe into the conversation, who's got 5 NBA titles since 99. But the question we want you to answer is there anyone else in that category that is just in a league of their own in their sport with Saban, with Belichick? 800-636-1067. Here was Nick Saban last night, asked after the game about adding another trophy to the hardware case.
As a coach, you want to see your team reach their full potential, but as a college coach, and the thing that I like about college coaching is you have an opportunity to affect people. You have an opportunity to help players be more successful in life because they're involved in the program, whether it's personal development, academic support, graduating from school, learning lessons. The message to the team tonight after this game was, I hope you take something from this game and the resiliency that you showed in this game, and it helps you be more successful in life. So it's not just about winning a championship. I mean, I know that's what you all write about and what you talk about and all that. And we like winning, and we hate losing. But there's more to it than that.
It's well said. And one of the big decisions he made last night, not that his legacy needed cementing, it already was, but I guess he just kind of underlined one more time how good he is.
Right.
Benching his veteran quarterback, who will not be on that team very likely now next year.
You wouldn't think.
Halfway through the national final, to go with a kid who had not played, forget on that stage, on any college stage that meant anything. And the quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, said that he was ready based on how he gets coached up.
I think preparation leading up to this point has been the key thing, you know, with our offensive coaches helping us throughout the process, you know, and just building the trust within each other, you know, from the O-line to the receivers, creating a bond with each other. I think that's helped us, you know, build confidence coming into this game to where, you know, if you got to go in, if your number is called, then, you know, you got to do what you got to do to give the team the best placement. Or how should I say this? You give the team the best opportunity to win the game.
And before we get to the Saban conversation here in studio, I guess one more thing we should call attention to from last night is the job that Kirby Smart did with Georgia. They lose Jacob Eason beginning of the season. They go to Jake Fromm. This is a program that has been known perennially as basically not being able to get to this point because they lose a game they shouldn't to an opponent that they shouldn't. And I'm sure there will be some kind of puns and people making fun of them for choking last night because they were up 20-3. But this is not the Georgia Bulldogs of the last several years, and it's because of Smart, who handled last night very well.
I can't say enough about the remarkable senior class. These two young men sitting next to me, they meant more to Georgia than yards. A lot of heart and soul, a lot of fire. Sonny Michelle came over and talked to the group several times during the game, inspired those guys. But in overtime, we didn't finish when we had to, and Alabama did. And to give them credit, but I think everybody can see that Georgia's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I'm very proud of this team and this university, and we're not going anywhere.
Smart's a great coach. Nick Saban is just on another level.
Well, here's the thing, and there's certain guys that are suited for certain tasks, and here's what I mean. If you give Nick Saban the same talent as everybody else, see NFL, the results aren't special. What's the most amazing thing about him and what he's been able to do is entice this consistent, unstoppable pipeline of incredible NFL talent. The way that Miami was doing around the, you know, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, where it's, you're probably not going to play for a couple years. You got to sit behind this guy that's going in the first round or the second round or the third round.
It's a tough sell.
But when you do play, you're going to the show. And you're going to get your chance. You'll have you'll start for 1 year, and you'll be a first-round defensive end. You'll be a first-round running back. I mean, they've got a staple of top 10 at every spot. That, to me, is what's miraculous. His ability as a recruiter, a finisher, a guy that
is a better man than you are.
You're dead right about that, Phyllis, at least at recruiting. The ability to do that, to me, is what sets him apart. Again, I don't think he's going to X's and O's. You know, like a tactician, and everybody's got different strengths.
Well, that point in the NFL, when it's not about the recruiting,
that's my thing.
He did a pretty good job. I think people forget in Miami. Now, he left amid turmoil and was thought of as pretty much a jerk when he left Miami
the way he did.
Because he just kind of rolled out in a way that didn't resemble the kind of dignity you want for someone leading your organization. But you're right. A lot of what's great about Nick Saban is done basically before the season even starts.
Yeah, he's the CEO. So to me, different guys have different strengths and are able to do it differently. I mean, the guy that he most closely reminds me of, and I think he's head and shoulders better now just given how deep and competitive football is Coach K in college basketball. The same type of deal where
right.
I'm going to recruit excellent players who either have to sit or are one and done or whatever, and you find a way to be a top five team every year.
Joe's in Mechanicsville wants to hop in on the national championship game. What's up, Joe?
Hello.
Joe, hey, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, one stat I heard this morning I found was absolutely amazing was every single recruit since Nick Saban has been the coach with Alabama has won a national championship. That's 9 years of recruits that have won a national championship. He can go to any living room and sell that and get probably any player he wants, knowing you come to Alabama, you're guaranteed a national championship.
Yeah, ask any of the hundreds of guys whose living rooms I've sat in before.
Yeah, doing the math, that's true.
Staggering. John in Bristow, what's up?
Hey, how you guys doing? Danny, I want to disagree with you. I don't think it's Krzyzewski in college basketball. I think it used to be. I think it's Calipari now. Because what he does is it's more impressive is he doesn't just bring in a couple one-and-dones every year. He brings in 10 guys who think they're five-star blue-chip first-round draft picks every year, turns them into a Sweet 16 team, and then sends them off to the NBA and then does it again the next year. Krzyzewski keeps most of his glue guys. I think your guy in the NBA is Popovich.
Popovich, yeah.
He's just been doing it longer. I think in baseball, it's actually really hard because we think we've gotten to a point where general managers are more directing the roster construction. But
agreed.
If you had to hold a gun to my head, it's Joe Maddon probably.
Yeah, and Madden's lost a little bit of luster even, some shine if you look back at some of his postseason decisions this past year. He's probably still considered the best manager. But there is no manager in that sport that's head and shoulders better than everyone else. And I think that you're right. Philosophically, the way the kind of the structure goes in the front office with GMs is the biggest reason why. Philip on Twitter says the entire Alabama team was basically recruited by Kirby Smart. Well, he had a lot to do with their recruiting.
Sure.
And you've already seen the impact that he's going to continue to have at Georgia. This is just another hurdle to clear if you're Nick Saban. I mean, you write that first bestseller and then the second bestseller, and now you got to keep writing them. And you got to do it without some of the people that have helped you. One of those guys is Kirby Smart, who was coaching against yesterday. He has now beaten 12 of the 13 assistants, or I should say 13 games have been played against him, where those teams are coached by some of his top lieutenants that
have
moved on.
From his coaching tree, yeah.
He's 12-1 in those games, which is just stunning. Amazing game last night. Let's get to the Redskins. Hop up a level next. If you were Kirk Cousins, what would you do right now? Ball is in your court. How would you play out this offseason? We'll get to that next on Grant and Danny.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports covers college football. He'll be on the show in 1 hour. We'll talk a little bit about last night's national final with him. Double play at 11:45. I've got a story that's going to creep you out and may give you a nightmare or two. So there's that.
Is it the one that just came across Twitter timeline about it take place in Spain by any chance? Okay. Yeah, I saw that. I was thinking about doing that. I will not do that now. That will be your domain.
We can both do it if you want.
I think we could both get in on that.
Grant and Danny on the fan. 11 o'clock, NBA coaches coming out in unison to shout down LaVar Ball's antics. So we will discuss that in about 27 minutes. But right now, we spoke yesterday about the Redskins, Jay Gruden, their feelings on Kirk Cousins and what's going to happen next from Washington's perspective. We have not asked you this question. We can open up the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines on this. If you were Kirk Cousins, what would you do right now? How would you play this out? What is in Kirk's best interest? And we had him on the show Friday exclusively for that 90-minute sit-down, which is available. You can podcast the entire thing at grantanddanny.com/audio. You can check out the video of the entire event at thefandc.com. But if you were Cousins, what would be your number one priority, and how would you hope that this offseason ends?
He needs, and I think he's already done this, to keep the Redskins' fire burning. You don't get it white hot. You don't get it to the point that this is what you're committed to, but that's always an option. It's a decent fallback option where you can muddle along. You can win your 7, 8, 9 games, as they've proven over the last 3 years. You can be just okay because this front office is out of the dark ages where they have no clue. They've got a little bit of a clue. They're not ready, though, to compete, in my humble opinion. You always keep that fire burning because it is a viable option. But I would 100% do pretty much exactly what he's doing and search for something better. Search for a situation where the ceiling is higher. Search for a situation where they have a football person that runs football operation and you have a philosophy. Not here. There's no philosophy here. It's a kind of, you know, whichever way the wind blows. We're a running team. Now we're a passing team. Well, now because we can't run, we're going to hire another running guy, Bill Callahan, and now we're going to be a defensive. They don't know what they want. They don't have a good vision. They never have under Dan Snyder because they don't lack a coherent one-man football operation in terms of a general manager. I would continue to say nice things about the Redskins, which I think he's going to do, but I would wait for that, whether it's Arizona or I'd wait for Denver or I'd wait for one of those places where if things go well, .. you're a Super Bowl contender. Because that's really what it seems to be what he wants. It's not just pay me the most so I can set the record of being the highest paid quarterback until it gets broken by Aaron Rodgers in 2 years or a year and a half, whatever the hell it is. I think he wants to go to a place where he's got a legit shot to do something special. I don't think special's here, But I would keep it. I would keep that fire burning here.
If I was Kirk Cousins, I would call my agent today, Mike McCartney, and I would say, listen, let's play this publicly however we need to, but it is time to move on. I'm kind of over it. I'm done with the 1 year at a time thing, which he told us, by the way, pretty candidly, in our sit down with him. But I would make the decision internally that I am kind of past playing for the Redskins at this point. There's just a lot of water under the bridge. Here is my concern. This is no longer Cousins talking. This is me talking.
All right.
For Cousins and the Redskins, is I don't see anymore this thing ending beautifully. I thought in 2015 there was definitely a way where he could be the long-term answer and they could be great with Kirk Cousins and it could all work out. Even last year, at the start of the offseason, had they have gone to him the first couple days after they lost to the Giants and tried to get a deal done, I could have seen a path to a happy ending, if you will, to marital bliss, to them being a very happy couple for the next several years. As the offseason went on, I kind of dwindled. I don't see that path anymore. I actually think from this point forward, only kind of bad things can happen. I think if you bring him back, he's probably only here for another year. We already saw some of the rumblings this year of these nonsense reports and, more importantly, just ridiculous comments made that were not reports by broadcasters, Dan Patrick and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
The receivers don't like him. Not particularly true, by the way, but it came out. What if the next story is bigger than that or more different than that and worse for the Redskins? You've got, since the season ended, the Jay Gruden comments, which I think are very revealing. If he's willing to say that publicly, what is he saying behind closed doors?
Right. I think that's the most telling thing that's happened.
1,000%.
I really do.
But if I'm Kirk Cousins,
because Jay's just tired of it.
I don't have a great relationship with Bruce Allen, and I don't think Bruce thinks all that highly of me. Dan Snyder loves players and basically just wants to be everyone's friend, so he's going to invite me over for dinner and invite me out to restaurants because at this point, I'm his $24 million man, so my relationship with him has actually gotten a little bit better. But is he going to stand on the table and demand that they pay me? Do I even want him to do that? What is my relationship with Jay Gruden at this point? Is it getting better or is it getting worse? Something we're going to talk about later in the show. But my perception is, this is based on not only the comments of Gruden this week, this is based on comments I know he's made to people in the past,
mm-hmm.
not at the podium, oh, by the way. This is based on the fact that Cousins has never been offered a market value deal, and he's very much involved in the front office and has been even more involved since Scott McLuhan left. And since that time, they've gotten further and further from a possibility of signing Kirk Cousins. So you start connecting these dots. I don't think their relationship is all that good. That's the most important relationship in that building that I have to have. And I don't mean personally. I just mean professionally.
Right, right.
What does Jay Gruden think of Kirk Cousins as a quarterback? If Sean McVay's confidence in Cousins as a QB was a 9, and Mike Shanahan's was a 10, and Kyle Shanahan's was a 9, what is Jay Gruden's? I think Jay Gruden's is like a 6. You know, but that's about where I would rank him. So my point is, I'm Cousins. I don't love working with Jay Gruden. I like it fine. He certainly doesn't love working with me. I don't love Bruce Allen. I don't even know if I like working with Bruce Allen. I can continue to do it if I need to because I'm a professional.
But I don't have to do that day to day. When I go to practice, Bruce isn't there. It's just big picture stuff. To sign a long-term contract,
I have to have faith that he can build a Super Bowl champion.
That's what I mean.
I have 0% faith in that.
Precisely.
I have 0% confidence in him as an executive. So if I'm Kirk Cousins, I am trying to get out of Washington. And the question we want to ask you guys on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines, do you agree with that? 800-636-1067. Your answer, if you're Kirk Cousins, you are...
I'm keeping this home fire burning, but looking for better options.
Let's go to Kelly in Virginia on the fan. What's up, Kelly?
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I thought that if I'm, you know, one, if I'm the Redskins, I'm putting out my best market value offer to him and transitioning, tagging him now. I'm not waiting to the deadline. He's just done this public appearance. I love Kirk. I think he's a great guy. I love him in the position to represent our city. I hate our front office, but I think that he's a good guy. Do I think he's going to take us there? I don't know, but I think he's been better than anything we've had in recent memory. And I do think he gets a fair shot. I should get a fair offer. If he doesn't, I mean, if he doesn't take it or he wants to still wait, then it kind of helps the Redskins, I think, and the team to say, okay, we can look at other options. We're not, you know, he really did just want to get out. He did just want to leave because, you know, we weren't, you know, playing around and trying to lowball him and all of that.
So that's all reasonable, but let me ask you this. What is your answer to our question? If you were Kirk Cousins, what would you want? What would you do right now?
I would wait. I would wait so I could play the field. I'd want to know what other teams.
That's basically,
you know,
what Danny's saying.
Yeah, I think you're exactly
right.
You would
flirt with the Redskins while you waited until the deadline so that you could start talking to other teams.
And I think she's exactly right, by the way. Just flipping this perspective for a second. The Redskins right now, I don't say losing the PR battle. Forget about that. I mean, there's still no damage has been done at this point.
Well, they've lost the PR battle just because they were wrong on the player.
Yeah, but I mean, in this moment, right? So overall, it's an L, but you can still do an awful lot of engendering some goodwill. Forget about the Bruce Allen fiery press conference where everybody that knows the market and understands football is laughing at you. Don't do that crap. Do a thing, just like Kelly just said. Give a great offer right now. Because here's what happens. You get a player at the offer, presumably, that you would want that's market value. It won't kill you, right? You make him turn it down.
What is a great offer?
I would say, or at least a great starting point. So somewhere the effect of, hey, we're going to give you, call it, $60 million guaranteed. We'll do, 24 a year over 5 years.
That's not a good offer, though.
It's a great starting point for an offer. It's infinitely more than they've done.
People would crush them for that offer.
I don't think they'd be crushed.
Yes, because the cap's going up $10 million, Danny. That's $2 million more than they offered him last year per year.
It's $40 million guaranteed than they offered him, isn't it?
It's $20 million over 3 seasons spread out in guarantees. That's not close to – they would get crushed for that offer.
I disagree with you. I don't think they'd be crushed. You would finally say, hey, this is where the real starting point is. This is the offer we should have given
Derek
you last
Carr
year.
Derek Carr got more than that on a cap that was $10 million less and just had a terrible season.
No, he didn't. Matt, he got. Oh, yes, he did. He got 70.
Yes, he did.
So
he got 70 in guarantees and he got 24 a year.
Yeah, so then maybe up the guarantee slightly. I think you're seeing that you're disagreeing with one tree instead of the forest. Make a legitimate offer.
Right.
And one that wouldn't kill you, but you'd be like, if he signed it, you'd be set. You'd be right as rain.
I agree with your point. The reason I ask what would you offer is because that's important. Because when you make the offer, you have to know he might say yes. Now he's not going to, for the record.
And he's not going to.
0%.
You make
chance.
Him say no is my point.
I agree. Make him say no, but you have to make an offer that is substantially better than the one that you just came up with. If you are actually going to make the offer that is going to swing the pendulum in your direction, so people say, the Redskins did what they have to do here. 800-636-1067. I want to get back into Kirk Cousins, though. Not what the Redskins should do. If you are the player, what would you want to do right now? Does anyone out there feel like if you were Kirk Cousins, you would want to sign here? Please build that case. Call in and explain why that would make sense for him. What would you do? That's the question on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. At 11 o'clock on Grant and Danny, what Steve Kerr, Rick Carlisle, and other head coaches are saying about LaVar Ball publicly calling out Lakers coach Luke Walton's ability to lead his team and even being more divisive than that, saying he's lost his team, the players do not like playing for him. Weird that Lonzo Ball's dad is a pain in the butt for an NBA coach that his team, his son plays for.
Who would have seen that coming? Anybody.
All of the people. I'd like to feel bad for the Lakers. I don't. You've made your bed, and I want you to sleep in it for a while.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, they had a policy of just we're not going to talk about it. Well, the monster keeps growing because the terrible organizations keep throwing mics in his face.
We will get to that in a little over 10 minutes here on The Fan. If you were Kirk Cousins, what would you do? We spend more time talking about the Redskins side of this than the player side of this. But after he was on our show on Friday, and he said all the right things and was very pro-team and absolutely kept the option open that he's coming back. Danny alluded to yesterday the fact that you think there's a better chance he plays for the Redskins this coming season now than you did before we sat down with
him
on Friday. I think a lot of people feel that way. And I have said to several times, and I believe this 100%, that in his mind, there's still a chance he's a Redskin after this season. Not just because of the one-year tag. I think there's still a possibility that he could test the market if he gets to do that, which is what he wants to do. And he still comes kind of crawling back to Washington because he didn't get what he want, not just monetarily, but in terms of situation to win, opportunities to get to a Super Bowl elsewhere. That said, if I'm him, I would not be thinking that way. I can't say this publicly, but I have closed the book mentally on being a Washington Redskin. This won't end well. And part of it is the fact that of the most important relationships for me in that building, the guy that has to run the entire thing, Bruce Allen, I just don't think that highly of as a professional at what he does in terms of team building or as a dude and how he's handled my situation, number one. Number two, Jay Gruden and I. The biggest reason why he wanted to evaluate moving forward last year, remember when we asked him, are you ready to negotiate? He said, no. Why didn't you extend that offer back? I need more time. I need to figure some things out about this team this year. What were the things? Well, there were some player things with receivers leaving, what have you. But the biggest deal was, I don't have my dude Sean McVay anymore.
Right. It was Sean's offense.
What kind of play caller is Jay Gruden going to be for me? I haven't seen it since 2014, and I got benched for not being good enough then. What kind of play design is he going to put in place for me? Is he going to run the offense the way Sean McVay did, the way that I love moving the football? Well, you've had a season now where you get to see that, and maybe they came together a little bit, but it doesn't sound like Jay, at the end of this season, loves Kirk Cousins.
Well, we've got a number of data points on that. Remember, when we were doing this dance last year, and again, I can't believe we're still doing this, but here we are. Jay was asked about sort of the quarterback position, he said, well, is Kirk 8 times better than Colt? Meaning Colt costs $3 million. Should Kirk cost 25? Whatever the heck it was.
And in fairness to that quote, that's not a quote he ever said publicly. Ever. That's something I've told you that he said behind the scenes.
I thought that was a public quote.
No, that has never been a public quote.
Well, fair enough. Apologize. So,
no, you don't have to apologize. No, I'm saying that we've said that on the show many times, but that was something that Jay told someone is my point.
Gotcha.
He's never said that at the podium.
So, but anyway, we've gotten data points, and Colt McCoy represents the fault here. Colt McCoy represents the thing that we're not supposed to, or kind of Jay's blind spot or his weakness, in so much as he knows that Kirk Cousins is better than Colt McCoy. He's not stupid. But in his mind, the gap ain't that big, and I bet you we'd be just as good or close to it if you just let me do what I wanted to do with Colt, the guy that I brought in here, by the way. That was my pick, Colt McCoy. That's the guy that I went. I inherited these other two guys
right.
that you guys drafted. When I got in here, I had to inherit a defensive coordinator. I inherited everything else in the front office, but I went and got Colt McCoy. So forget about the player specifically. That's a watch how smart I am kind of thing that NFL head coaches have to do all the time as a you know what measuring contest.
I agree with you completely. Here was Cousins when we were talking about the relationship with Jay.
Does Jay like you as much as Kyle and Sean did? I think that's an important question.
Yeah,
I'm honest.
You'd have to ask him. You know, I've never asked him that. You know, I didn't sit there at the exit interview and lean back
right.
and say, "How much do you like me?"
Yeah. Maybe you should have.
But
check yes or no.
You know? Well, I do want to preface it by saying it's not his job to like me. You know, he doesn't have to, and I don't know that.
Let me rephrase it. Do you think he thinks as highly of you as a quarterback as those two guys?
Well, I think it would be hard to think as highly of me as those two do, because at times they thought higher of me than I thought of me, you know? So they really had a unique perspective. But, you know, I do believe that Jay believes in me well, and you know, I think he's given me a great opportunity, and I feel very fortunate. I think with what came out today with, you know, Belichick and Brady, I don't know that Belichick's always been singing Tom's praises, you know, day in and day out for 15 years, even though Tom probably deserves it with all that he's done. So it's just different personalities and different people. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, I don't get too caught up in that.
Sharp answer, but a telling answer. Let's go to Ted in Maryland. What's up, Ted?
Hey, Ted.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man.
Excellent. So if I'm Kirk Cousins, Bruce Allen is a ignoramus, and there's no reason that, as everybody has said, that Kirk Cousins should be here long-term. If I were Kirk, I'd go into the office and say, listen, I have no desire to be here. In that case, if I were the Redskins, I would franchise tag him and try and trade him to someone like Jacksonville, their mid to late first-round pick. And then that way you guys have two first-round picks and about 10 picks. And then you maybe look at something like trading for Alex Smith, who only has a year left, and you target one of the quarterbacks, Josh Allen, great skill set, but raw, something like that with one of your first-round picks. So sets you up, gives you the bridge and an out with Alex Smith, and obviously doesn't make $34 million.
Thanks, Ted. Again, we want to know what you would do if you were Cousins. Anthony in Fairfax, what's up?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, man.
Good.
Well, I think two things. I tried to get an escalating deal if I were Kirk Cousins, where you get more money as the deal goes along.
That is a loud fire truck.
There is a situation developing.
Sorry,
wherever
Anthony.
He is.
Stay safe.
You be safe out there. Goodness gracious.
Well,
wow.
Those calls went well to wrap up that segment. A, I feel bad for Anthony. He waited, and then the fire truck ruined his day.
The exact wrong time. Poor Anthony. Anthony, call back about something else today.
Yeah, later. We're going to be talking Jay Gruden and Kirk Cousins' relationship in the 1 o'clock hour. 12 o'clock hour, we got a conversation about the best and the worst playoff games this weekend.
Fire truck Anthony over there.
Either of those are at your disposal. Next, let's talk LaVar Ball.
Boo.
He is annoying coaches around the NBA, and Danny just booed him.
Boo.
You're listening to Grant and Daniel.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.